Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Need expert advice on your family's health? Speak to us today. Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Good morning and welcome to the programme. Today, the price of your flight ticket is one thing, but how do you feel about paying for your seat, your bag and a cup of tea? Are airline extras fair? Farm leaders protest at the controversial reduction in nitrate limits, but what does it mean for herd sizes? And as another energy provider announces cuts to its prices, Eoin McGee will be here to take financial questions on that and on interest rates, switching lenders or the cost of living. You can text your questions now to 51551. Brian reports on the schools chasing parents for those voluntary contributions. And as Ireland's footballers take on France tonight and the rugby kicks off tomorrow, we're going to look back at 120 years of sporting rivalry between us and Les Bleus. The text number again, 51551. You can also email todaycb@rte.ie. Well, as we know, MPs in Westminster have passed the controversial legacy bill, which the British government says is aimed at drawing a line under the Troubles. The bill will end inquests, police ombudsman investigations, civil cases and police investigations into crimes committed as part of the Troubles, and in doing so, remove vital avenues to the truth for the countless families in Northern Ireland who continue to grapple with the painful tragedies of the past. As the government continues to mull over whether it should take interstate litigation to the European Court of Human Rights, I'm joined on the line now by former Taoiseach and former Fianna Fáil leader Bertie Ahern. Good morning to you. Now, as we know, the Good Friday Agreement contained a number of contentious elements, including the release of paramilitaries, which was an extremely bitter pill to swallow for victims at the time. But was it ever envisaged, Bertie, that this type of conditional amnesty would apply?
It wasn't. Now, I should say, Claire, this isn't an easy issue to resolve, because at the very start, I remember back when we had the Peace and Reconciliation Forum in Dublin Castle, the clerk came over from South Africa. I spent a whole day with him, or at least most of the day, talking about how they dealt with the victims. So even before the Good Friday Agreement, that was a big issue. Their solution to that was the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. But that meant that both the perpetrators and the victims would come face to face in a commission. That wasn't a runner. I tried that at the time, but it wasn't a runner. Then we always said that the victims had to be dealt with and we had to deal with it as a separate case. We went on to deal with policing and other issues. And it was 2001 in Weston Park before we came back to try to find a solution to the victims. We came up with a range of cases from both the unionists and nationalist sides, and some high-level cases like the Finucane and Rosemary Nelson, Breen Buchanan cases. Justice Curry did the international report, a Canadian Supreme Court judge. That didn't resolve the issue. And then it moved on for several years before the parties in the North, with the Irish government, Charlie Flanagan at the time, came to the Stormont House Agreement. That didn't work because the British government, they just played around with it for a long time. And then the last 5 years, it came to this legacy bill. So it has been a quarter of a century in the making. But the problem with this, I always have said, and I met victims groups, I met them this year in Farmley, and I've met them in other places as well in the North. I've always said, have to be honest, I cannot see a system that can deal with every case ad infinitum on into the future, but you can try and deal with cases where there's new evidence, which was what the Stormont House Agreement was. But this legislation, which is effectively saying that criminal civil cases, inquests, would all be gone with no access for victims to these, that seems to be a very cruel way of dealing with victims.
Yeah, so all of the work that you have just described there that happened from 1998 right the way up to 2014 and beyond, what this does is it rides roughshod over all of that, would you say?
It does, because, you know, the Stormont House Agreement, again, I'd say it's not an easy one to implement, but the reality is there's very little areas in the north where everybody agrees, and they do on Stormont House. So it always seemed, and I said this to Brandon Lewis, saying, listen, when he was Secretary of State, that it's not an easy thing to resolve, but at least take the basis of what you had in 2014, which by the time this legislation takes effect, which is next May, it'll be 10 years, and at least take that as a basis. To go off on a separate track and ignore what is civil rights and human rights, and debar criminal cases and civil cases and inquests is just not the way to deal with them. What will happen is either the Irish government deal with this, which is obviously what's been talked about today and by the Taoiseach and the Tánaiste at the weekend at the Northern Ireland debate, or individuals will take it to court. So one way or the other, this is heading to court.
Yeah, but Ian Jeffers this morning from the Commission for Victims and Survivors on Morning Ireland, he said that it's just not fair, it's not right to expect victims to have to go to court. And he said the quickest way to test the legality of this is for the Irish government to challenge it. So should the government just go ahead and do that now?
Well, I think that's obviously what they're thinking about, but the issue will be for the Attorney General to see if there's a case. We only brought one case, Claire, back 52 years ago, at the start of the Troubles. That case was with the Irish government that effectively won that case in the end. So it's not something they can do lightly. They have to see if they go to the justices of the European Court that they have a case that will stand up. I think this is a strong case. I think the argument will be that they're not looking for across the board for every case to be dealt with for the next 50 years. What they're saying, if there's new evidence, if there's substantive evidence, if that stands up to a DPP's examination, then those cases can be heard. Sometimes you hear reports as if people are saying that every case forever, and the British government, I think, like to make this the position that we're talking about 30,000 cases going through courts for the next 50 years. That isn't it. It's only as if there's substantive new evidence and a case that stands up that a DPP believes that is judiciable. That's what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Because Ian Jeffers said as well that this is essentially an amnesty for a small number of veterans. Do you agree that that is at the core of what this is all about? And it seems if you agree that the Good Friday Agreement is at risk here, or a very important part of it, it's a lot to put on the line for that.
It is, and I'm not too sure why the British government are pushing this so strong. Clearly, there is a lobby within the Tory party that believe for the military, the vets, that they should deal with this issue. But I understand that there's a lot of vets who've now looked at this and they think this isn't the way to go. I don't know if it was an Irish position, what we would now be looking to the president not to sign the bill and to have a meeting of the Council of State, which I'm on here. I don't know what the King can do, but it seems he seems to be a fair person. He understands Ireland. Why they should ask him to sign a bill that's clearly against civil rights and human rights. I'm not familiar with their system.
Well, it's
a bill that shouldn't be signed.
It's really interesting that you bring that up. And can the Irish government appeal to King Charles and say, can you intervene here? Can you not sign this into law?
That would be my next court of call, because I don't like the idea of an interstate case between the Irish and British government for this reason, Claire. We're trying to move forward. We're trying to make progress. We want the institutions in the north set up. We've had the Windsor Agreement. I understand things like Casement Park, that Heaton Harris has been very helpful with the GAA. I believe there are a number of other positive things. So to put the Irish and British government on the international stage in the European Court of Human Rights, you know, rather than sitting down at a table saying, this is where we were in 2014. Can we improve on this? We're not looking for broad brush opening up of cases. It seems a far better way. And, you know, I would like that. I'm not sure how the system works, but I think to me, King Charles seems like a reasonable person. And I do not think he will want to upset the victims on all sides. Remember, we're not talking here about one side.
Yeah.
We're talking about nationalists, unionists, loyalists, Republicans. And, you know, why hit them all in the face with legislation that nobody agrees with except the British government?
And who do you think should make that appeal to King Charles?
Well, I think that some of the victims' groups is probably the best way of doing it, because I think he has met, I've met some of the groups, and I know some of those groups have met him in the north. And, you know, it's his government in the end. You know how the Irish system works.
Should it not be our government? Should it not be the Irish government making the appeal?
Well, I think the Taoiseach is, or the Taoiseach, as far as I know, is meeting Chris Hooton Harris next week, and I think he would be asking him not to sign the legislation into law.
Yeah, but it sounds, Bertie, as though we've lost the British government. So if you're moving then to King Charles, I'm wondering, are you saying that Leo Varadkar should go to him, or Micheál Martin, or perhaps yourself?
Well, I think some of the victims' groups are probably the best. If it's made political, then they say he's above politics.
But that comes back to Ian Jeffers' point, that it's not fair to place that burden on the victims' groups in the same way that it's not fair to expect them to take this to court.
Yeah, well, going to court is both expensive, it's drawn out, it's long-term. And there's the additional point, Claire, that there's not a hope in hell at this being dealt with in the life of the present British government. And unless the figures are totally wrong, it's not going to be the Tory government. So, and you know, Keir Starmer has said that if he's elected into power, he'll stand down this legislation. So, I mean, I just don't get it. Why to bring us all, and particularly the victims, because they're the ones we're really talking about, why to bring everyone to this point when this bill should just be stood down? And if it's King Charles, if the British government won't listen, if he has the right, I don't know if he has in their system, he wouldn't, this system. I can tell you this, if it was Michael Dee, I could not see him sign this kind of legislation.
Okay, now let's move on, because we had Peter Sherlow, director at the University of Liverpool's Institute of Irish Studies. He was on the programme this week. He's of the view that members of the commission will literally be knocking on the doors of the alleged perpetrator. So someone essentially would get a knock on the door, be asked to explain their actions. That then would be relayed to the families in a protected disclosure. Is that your understanding about how the commission will go about its business?
Yeah, well, the commission, if belief is that people will come forward, or at least they'd be contactable, and that they would make statements that would effectively say that they have a case to answer. Now, we know in the 100 years of Irish history, we've just come to the end of the Civil War, that what happens with paramilitary groups on all sides, and we've too much history on this, that people don't come forward. There might be a handful of people on their deathbed might feel that they should give evidence, but you're not going to get 1,700 murders, people coming forward. I mean, it's just not going to happen. And you never should bring in legislation that you know is not workable. Mm-hmm. But they know this won't work.
If the knock on the door method happens or is pursued, there might be a danger there for the security of the person that they're trying to make contact with, and also the community to which that person belongs, because you're reopening old wounds by even asking questions about it.
Yeah, well, Claire, the way that answered a question, I'm not saying I condone this, but say if the leading members or active members of paramilitary groups that were there before the Good Friday Agreement are brought into that situation, what they're going to do is they're going to look at a spot in the wall, and they're not going to answer questions. That's what they always did, and they do it now. And in their old age, they'll do it again. So that method by the Commission of getting evidence, you might get a handful of cases, and it's not going to work. And it's a misunderstanding, I think, by the British government of how unfortunately, paramilitary groups operate.
And we've just marked the anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement, the peace it has brought to the island. And we know the dissident threat remains high. I mean, do you think there's any risk with this now that it could spurn another outbreak of violence?
I hope not. I mean, I have met, because I'm involved in a number of think tanks, I've met a number of people who've been involved on all sides in the paramilitary violence, and they even accept that if there's new evidence, if there is new cases and something that's detrimental to them, that the victim has a right for a case. So, you know, who does it serve? And I honestly believe if you go back to the Storm and House Agreement, and I'm not saying that's perfect, there's some holes in that too, but take that as a basis where the Irish and British government sit down with the parties and try and make progress on that. It would be far better than an interstate case where they're sitting opposite each other with the bad blood that'll bring forward, and it's not the way to go.
I know you're aware of all the talk about the crowds who went to see the Wolf Tones at Electric Picnic. Do you worry about younger people singing rebel songs that the Wolf Tones perform, or is it overblown?
No, I think it's overblown. I mean, the Wolf Tones, I like the Wolf Tones. I went to them in the 60s and 70s. They've been around a long time. They've had a lot of good music. And that particular song was a Glasgow Celtic song. It was done for the centenary of Celtic. And I've been lucky enough to be able to go to a few Celtic Rangers matches.
Celtic don't associate themselves with the song anymore, though. I know that.
They don't, and I can tell you, I know Rangers don't associate with a lot of the songs that are sung when the Rangers enter the ground either. So it's not great, but I think if you tell young people at a concert not to do something, well, you can be fairly sure that they'll do the opposite. They'll only rebel. What I think the way of handling this is to try and educate the rising population, and I say that in a kind way. I mean, they weren't around, so how would they know? But educate them what the troubles were about the huge amount of killings and bombings and murder and mayhem and economic damage, and you know, people having to emigrate and families broke up. That's what people need to understand, and they can't be glorifying, you know, singing songs that, and there are songs on both sides. There's the one that we're talking about, but there's on the Lila side, there's other horrendous songs that. So I think, you know, let's try and educate the rising population of just what we lived to for 30 years in this country.
Should the Wolf Tones continue to perform that song? This is the Up the Ra Celtic Symphony song.
Listen, I remember one year I got a ticket for the wrong end of a Celtic Rangers match, and I can tell you I don't think I was ever so fearful in the middle of a Rangers crowd. So some of the songs are horrendous, but listen, you know, two wrongs don't make a right. So I think let us try and inform people rather than talking about banning things.
All right, Bertie Hearn, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Claire.
51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.